Can I welcome you all for the first speaker of tonight, Mr. Craig Murray. And Craig, if you don't know, was a former UK ambassador to Uzbekistan. He was a whistleblower and a man of conscience and deep conviction. Craig Murray, ladies and gentlemen.
Actually, I want to speak from that one. I think that looks like great fun. It's wonderful to see you all here to support Julian, to see so many of you again. Some of you, I'm quite sure. I left Woolwich Crown Court in a car to get here about 45 minutes ago. Not quite sure. I saw some of you standing outside. And how on earth you got here before me, I have no idea. But, plainly, the odd TARDIS was involved. But you've made it, and well done. Those of you who've been there know how horrible and how dispiriting it is. I feel very tired just after a couple of days of attending that court. It's oppressive. It's extremely deliberately unpleasant. It's extraordinarily restrictive. You have a trial that is of interest to the world, and it's deliberately put where the world can't see it. You have a mainstream media that turns up to report it and then doesn't report it. And notably, yesterday, the BBC, The Guardian, ITN, Sky, they were all there yesterday for the prosecution statement. They all left after the prosecution statement. And today was, of course, the opening of the defense, so none of them were there at all, because they have no interest in the defense. All they were interested in doing was putting the government case and using it further to smear Julian. It is deeply dispiriting to be present at this sham of justice and at this much wider demonization in public opinion of Julian, and this failure to present the true facts about the case from those whose job ought to be to present them. And in the court itself, it is impossible to sit in that court without realizing what you are watching is a charade, and that the magistrate has no real interest at all in the arguments, is not giving a fair hearing to the defense. Every single comment the magistrate makes is to query, question, or belittle the points which the defense have made. Her final comments, as we left today, were to point out that although the United States United Kingdom extradition treaty says you may not be extradited for a political offense, the Extradition Act in UK law does not say you may not be extradited for a political offense. Therefore, irrespective of the content of the treaty, a political offense may still be extraditable. Yesterday, we had the magistrate note that whether or not Julian Assange aided or abetted Chelsea Manning in any way was immaterial, because under the Official Secrets Act, which is the UK equivalent law under the dual criminality rule for extradition, merely to possess official secrets at all, unauthorized possession or unauthorized publication of official secrets, are themselves in strict liability illegal. Therefore, the question of whether or not Julian Assange colluded with Chelsea Manning was immaterial. He could be found liable and extradited anyway. And every single comment the magistrate has made has tended to favor the prosecution. There is not even the barest attempt at a covering of impartiality. And there have been times when the trouble is you get drawn into the charade. You know, you see, we're going through this process, and you see the defense making some rather good points. Today, we had the defense completely demolish the argument that lives were put at risk by WikiLeaks in the publication of the Afghan war logs and in the publication of the diplomatic cables. That argument was completely demolished. And as well as that, the defense brought out the great good that was done and the terrible things that were revealed in the public interest in terms of extrajudicial killings, murder of children, murder of journalists, torture centers, black ops with death squads going around Afghanistan. And you sat there, and from time to time you think, wow, this is good. Wow, the defense are making good points. Wow, that's a strong argument. And then you realize it doesn't bloody matter, because there isn't a jury anyway. And we're not actually seeing a genuine process. Anyone who doesn't believe the fix is in is very naive. And the prosecution don't appear to be doing terrifically well. Several people keep coming up to me in the courtroom saying, it's going well, isn't it? And the prosecution, you know, they seem underprepared. Well, they are underprepared because they're not particularly trying, because they know that the verdict was decided before they set into the courtroom. They don't have to prepare. What we are witnessing is a show trial, as surely as anything Stalin did was a show trial. And we have to continue to fight this, and we have to continue to push this, and we have to continue to try to change public opinion, to change political opinion, and to convince the British establishment that this is something up with which the British people will not put. It's a long haul. I will be delighted, but absolutely shocked to my core if this magistrate decides against extradition. But I think we will get to appeal, and I think eventually we're going to win in the High Court or the Supreme Court. But that could be 2 or 3 years down the road. And for someone like me who's a friend of Julian and knows him, to see him in his current physical and mental condition is extremely worrying. Today, later in the afternoon, the magistrate actually stopped proceedings for a while to ask whether he was in a fit state of health to continue, because he didn't look in a fit state of health to continue. And today we heard, in court, we heard that yesterday, after the trial, he was twice taken out of his cell and strip-searched. But he was 11 times handcuffed. 11 times he had handcuffs put on him and off him yesterday. And that all the papers his lawyers had given him in the court in order for him to be able to participate in his defense, all of the papers were taken off him by the prison. And those included confidential communications, privileged communications, between him and his lawyers on his defense. And the state has simply taken them. These are gross and vile abuses of process. And if there were any real sense of justice here, they would in themselves be enough to stop the proceedings. Just as yesterday, we heard how the CIA had arranged spying on him in the Ecuadorian embassy on legal conferences with his lawyers. The American state, which is beginning the extradition, has been spying on the defense. In any genuine process, that by itself would halt proceedings. But what we don't have is any genuine process. Now, I hope you will forgive me, because I'm tired. I'm a little shaken by all of this, shaken by the obvious brutality of it. But the obvious brutality of it is the point. And the purpose of the obvious brutality of it is to shake us and to make us scared and to turn the whole world into compliant citizens. And it is not going to work, because up with this we will not put. What the Julian Assange case has always been about freedom. It's always been about our right as citizens to know of the crimes which governments commit in our name. It's always been about the right of the people to hold government to account. But it's widened beyond freedom of speech issues. It's turned into a question of the fundamental rule of law and whether there is any access to justice in our society. We are now engaged in a struggle for the heart of our society, in a struggle for whether there is any truth at all in the notion of a liberal democracy, in the notion of liberty, or whether power, untrammeled power, now has no limits, has no possibility of check, whether the dream that the internet could open up new access, new ways for people to organize, to learn, to disseminate information, whether that dream can be crushed and information is again going to be limited to what's being put out by an increasingly restricted and increasingly lockstepped corporate media. We are engaged in a dreadful struggle. A struggle which is essentially the struggle against fascism. That is where we now stand. And you could not have it more perfectly illustrated than by seeing the goings-on at Woolwich Crown Court. And I am delighted that as we embark on this struggle, we are in such good company with each other. We may be tired, but it is not that we are in bad heart. We are in good heart. We are going to carry on, and we are going to win. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. Thank you, Craig Murray there. Thank you. So, could I welcome our fifth speaker here, Mr. George Galloway.
Thank you. Gregor, I hope you didn't mean that I'm a liberal. Honourable Craig Murray, my RT colleague Peter Lavelle, honourable speakers, brothers and sisters, comrades and friends, this is a magnificent event attended by people, as Greg said, of different political stripes, but united in solidarity with prisoner number A9379AY, the world historic figure, Julian Assange. I just want to, in parenthesis, make this point. I said the Honourable Craig Murray. All of the speakers are honourable. But he is right honourable. You see, people like me had no choice but to take this path. We were born into it. We had no alternatives. The struggle against imperialism was the only choice that we had. But Craig Murray had a glittering career in the British Foreign Office, Her Majesty's ambassador to Uzbekistan, And he threw it all away because he stood up for justice against torture, against disappearances, against political repression. He threw it all away. He could have kept his head down, been the ambassador for here and for there, and have a knighthood. Well, they may not give you a knighthood, but you'll always be Sir Craig Murray to me. Yes. 10 years ago, exactly on this day, I was kidnapped by the thugs of the dictator Hosni Mubarak, who died today. I was kidnapped in the dead of night. I was taken by men without uniform who couldn't speak English, even if they had wanted to tell me who they were and where they were taking me. They drove me for many hours, I knew not where, and deposited me at the airport in Cairo, served me with the certificate, which I proudly hold, a blue paper, declaring me persona non grata and no longer welcome in Egypt. And I have to tell you that the legal proceedings as described here this evening and in the various blogs, because that's the only place you're going to read anything substantive about what's going on in blogs like Craig Murray's and many others, these legal proceedings would have been more fitting in Hosni Mubarak's dictatorship in Egypt than in a country like Britain, which is supposed to be a Western democracy. Who cannot tremble with indignation at what happened to Julian Assange just yesterday? Never mind over the last decade. Just yesterday, this man who should be in Oslo getting the Nobel Peace Prize was being stripped and searched by goons, handcuffed, held in 5 different cells in one day, handcuffed 11 times, handcuffed for what? He was in a bulletproof box all day in the court. What were they searching him up his backside for? Why did they take his legal papers away? Talk about an abuse of process. This is an obscenity in a country that pretends to believe in the rule of law and justice. Who cannot tremble with indignation when we learn that every movement, literally, Craig, every time we went to the toilet in the Ecuadorian embassy, the CIA were watching it on video. I'm not exaggerating. There was a camera in the toilet where Pamela Anderson peed, where Craig Murray and me and others who have the honor to be friends of Julian Assange, but much more importantly than our movements, they spied on every legal meeting that Julian had with his representatives in absolute brazen defiance of the rules of justice and the lawyer-client privilege. As Craig pointed out, in any other, if you were in court because your dog had fouled the pavement, and this kind of abuse of process was unveiled by the defense, the case would be thrown out immediately. No trial can take place when it's been corrupted from the beginning in this way. Who cannot tremble with indignation at the idea that the I'm coming to that point. Who cannot tremble with indignation? A at the idea that the man that blew the whistle on the war crimes is in Belmarsh and the war criminals are on the BBC and ITV and raking in millions and millions and millions and millions of pounds. The criminals have made it a crime to report on the crimes that they committed. Ponder that. That's now the country that we are living in. Who cannot tremble with indignation? Well, 95% at least of Britain's journalists didn't even show up today to hear the defense's argument. 95% of Britain's broadcasters are not trembling with indignation. If you cannot tremble with indignation at any injustice anywhere, you are not a human being. You have no pulse and you have no soul. And that's the reality of the so-called fourth estate in this country. I spit upon them. This church should be bulging with journalists, because if they had any intention of actually doing their job, what is happening to Julian Assange is a mortal danger to them. It's a knife at their heart. It's a sword of Damocles hanging over their heads. If they ever intended to actually be journalists. But of course, the truth is, most of them have sold whatever soul they had just for a ribbon to put on their coat, just for a shilling or two. They have abandoned any claim of moral authority. And these are the people that lecture us, especially at election times. Speaking of which, on the principle that it's better late than never, I'm glad that Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell have finally found a voice to speak up in favour of Julian Assange. And if they'd done so earlier, we might have been further down the road to getting Julian out of Belmarsh. Now, I only have time to make two more quick points. And again, they relate to what the Honourable Craig Murray said. You see, I was there when this extradition treaty was reached. It was concluded behind the backs of Parliament, during the summer recess, when no member of Parliament could question the treaty which David Blunkett, Tony Blair's Home Secretary, corruptly and secretly concluded with the United States, a one-sided extradition treaty, the likes of which no free country would ever sign with any other country, where they'd never have to send anybody to us, whatever they've done, even if it's killing a young boy on a motorway because you're driving up the wrong side of the road. You don't have to send anybody to us. But we will send anybody to you without even just cause having to be produced. But when Parliament returned in the autumn, I bearded David Blunkett in the members' lobby and told him all the things that I thought were wrong and dangerous with this extradition treaty. And he said to me, "You're worrying unnecessarily because all of the points you're making are taken care of by Article 4.1 of the treaty, which precludes the extradition of people in Britain for political offences to the United States." And now the judge is telling us that although that's on the face of the treaty, it does not apply. What madness is this? And the second point. Sorry? Windrush. That's another meeting. I'll come back to that. The last point then that I have time to make is this. If we allow, if the British public allows, if the British media allows, if the British political class allows, and remember this has to be rubber stamped, signed off by the current Home Secretary, Priti Patel. So public opinion has a role here. He cannot be sent from this country without a politician, an elected politician, a member of an elected government, signing the final extradition order. If we allow Julian Assange to be sent for the rest of his life, the rest of his life, into the dungeons of the US injustice system, journalism, freedom, freedom of speech, democracy itself will have been murdered in plain sight on our watch. And that's why we are going to fight and fight and fight again to free Julian Assange. Free Julian Assange!